or it would be silliness if it weren't so damned deadly. Answering your question, no, if you want, Tim, if you want to ring into the program, you dial in. No, and it's I, not me. You had it right the first time, too. Bob Kincaid Horn, and just press your little call button, and there we are. There are, so many stories available for this Moran Monday. Another gun story for you. This one has a slightly happier ending, insofar as the victim did not die. But it is a clear case of the operation of the goddess of irony. It's the story of Ray Dolan, 39 years old, an author working on a book called The Kindness of America. See what I meant about the irony? Hitchhiking, thumbing, made it to Montana, where a man offered him a ride and then promptly shot him. 52-year-old Lloyd Danielson III was placed under arrest on history that includes assault. That, according to the police in Glasgow, Montana. Fortunately, Mr. Dolan is expected to make a full recovery. And presumably will go back to work on his book, The Kindness of America.
But a corporate sleaze, yes.
Well, yeah, Andy says, a man that can be bought by the top 1%, the ruling plutocracy. Hubbard makes Hubbard makes ex-Treasury Secretary Robert Rubin and Larry Summers look like a bunch of choir boys. This guy has no remorse for his deregulatory policies during the Bush regime and helping to cause the problems Europe and the U.S. are now suffering, not to mention the total collapse of our banking system from laissez-faire lack of oversight and over-leveraging of capital, total financial system collapse. You want to blame someone for our financial collapse? Hubbard, Andy notes, is right up there.
Oh, no, now that he mentioned I remember him clearly because I was disturbed. The sort of sociopathic radar popped up when I saw that one. He's bad. He is bad.
And so he goes to Germany to argue that the Germans should let Europe burn.
Well, I mean,
isn't that essentially what he's saying?
Yeah, that's the melon mentality. You know, liquidate this. Just like Romney was talking about, liquidate everything. Purge the system. They're so obsessed with, what's the latest thing I saw that had me rolling? Sadomonitorism. I'm like, damn, that's a good...
What a word.
That shit is on, though. Because, you know, if you have any clue about the financialization of every goddamn thing, that's perfect. Because, you know, it is sort of... You know, they're perfectly okay bailing out this bank system to the tune of $125 billion and just be okay with 30 and 50% unemployment. I mean, it's something just terribly, terribly wrong. Terribly wrong with this.
Well, and what, this is where I sort of get lost, Sandra. What do these ruling elites expect will become of people who are trapped in persistent, perhaps decade-long 20-30% unemployment? What do those people usually do if one studies history?
Yeah, but...
Power when we all
Down with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation cussing and discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! It is, by Jove, it is Tuesday. It is the 12th of June, 2012. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid, headonradionetwork.com. A little thing we like to call conversation radio, available only on the series of tubes. If someone tries to bring you The Horn via a big truck, don't trust them. Internet-only broadcasting for... Oh, golly Moses, going on 7 years? Hard to believe, isn't it? And some of you have been with us for almost that entire time. Some of you have been with us for that entire time. We are all the members of the Horn family. And it's a mighty pleasant little family of which to be a member. We are listener-supported. We are supported by the kind contributions of the people who share their time and their ideas to keep this all going. There is a contribution button at headonradionetwork.com, as is the snail mail address. Both of them work equally well. And we are much appreciative for all that goes toward keeping this little experiment in the First Amendment going. This little experiment in perhaps not the First Amendment, but certainly freedom of expression. With caveats. We offer no freedom of expression here to right-wingers. They are expressly not welcome. It's one of the nice things I think you can count on in tuning into The Horn. You don't have to run the risk of listening to some knuckle-walking, mouth-breathing, snake-handling, floor-pulling, strychnine-swigging, right-wing religion industry freak when you tune in here. They ain't welcome. Just goodbye now. Right? Right. Why? Is that because I get my jollies suppressing... No. It's because they're idiots. It's because we have learned for, yea, verily, something on the order of 25 years now, that they have if not longer, if not an entire generation, if not going back into the 1960s with the weird little John Birchers and the Alan Stang report. Think about it. That they have nothing to offer the body politic. They have absolutely nothing to offer in terms of the considered or good faith creative solutions for going forward into a future that utterly refuses to be the mythological past that the right wing so yearns for. So don't come here thinking you're going to get to hear some right winger talking about how there's a race of men who live in the trees, and I say, I live all night for calls like these. Thanks for calling. No, it ain't going to happen. What you're going to hear here is a broad spectrum and a wide variety of folks from around the country, all of whom share the common idea that this country is worth saving. It's in pretty bad shape right now. And it's not in bad shape because of anything progressives or liberals did. It's in bad shape because it's been put this way. I was thinking along these lines when I received an email earlier this evening. From our buddy Ron in Raleigh. He says, a couple of weeks ago, I was let go from the temp position that was supposed to become permanent. Oddly enough, I was the oldest worker on the job. Age discrimination, you ask? Since that day, I've had more time to read and absorb current affairs, Bob. Things are bad and getting worse, not for the elites, just for folks that actually have to work for a living. One article I read was concerning wage theft. Wage theft has nothing to do with low-wage employees stealing from employers, just the opposite. Well-to-do corporations such as Walmart are stealing from their low-wage employees. The shorting of hours, making workers work through breaks, not paying final hours once workers are terminated. Don't forget working workers off the clock after they've clocked out at the end of their shift, Ron. The corporations are free to do so because there is no pushback from the government, and, of course, no union pushback because unions have been gutted. Millions of dollars are being stolen from the people that can least afford it, and you know where that largesse is going. Another article notes that family net worth has declined to the level of the 1990s. I think 1992, to be precise. I saw that statistic earlier today myself and couldn't help reflecting, why, yes, yes, that would be just as America was emerging from its long national nightmare of 8 years of Ronnie Reagan followed by 4 years of Pappy Bush. Ron continues, median net worth has gone from $126,400 in 2007 to $77,300 in 2010. Income has declined by 7.7% over the same period. How are we supposed to survive when income is going backwards and the cost of everything we need to live continues to increase in cost at a frightening pace? In my local paper today was an article that could be the death knell for a great many people. The article concerns the impending merger of Duke Power and Progress Energy. If these two companies merge, they'll be the only choice for 7.1 million consumers in a dozen states and some localities in Latin America. What the hell is the DOJ's antitrust division doing? 1,860 jobs at the corporate level up in smoke. I'm sure you can guess the alleged reason for the merger. Economies of scale. $1 billion in savings in the early years of the merger. My favorite, not charging customers for the cost of the merger, including $250 million of severance pay. Ron in Raleigh closes saying, please, if you've heard anything positive that is happening for the working class in America, let me know. This ledge seems to be getting narrower. Well, I wish I could. I'd love to. I'd like to tell you that somewhere in America there's a little workers' paradise. But there ain't one. Everywhere in the United States, working people are desperately clinging to whatever few and diminishing rights they have. There is nowhere in the United States where the rights of workers are expanding. Nowhere. I mean, think of it. You tell me. Are workers' rights expanding in Alabama? Are they expanding in Florida? Are they expanding in Massachusetts? Or Michigan, or Minnesota, or Wisconsin? Is it getting better in California? Is it getting better in Oregon or Washington? Is it getting better in Missouri or Kansas? Hawaii, Alaska, Guam, Puerto Rico, the Marianas Protectorate? No. That one statistic that Ron mentioned, and I just kind of slapped myself on the forehead in that sort of the you know, I could have had a V8 motion. Another article notes that family net worth has declined to the level of the 1990s. Median net worth has gone from $126,400 in 2007 to $77,300 2010. That means in the space of 3 years, median net worth lost almost $50,000. Imagine what that was like for people on the way underside of that 126.4, or on the way underside of that 77,003. But it was lost, right? Median net worth has gone from 126.4 in 2007 to 77.3 in 2010. It was lost. That $50,000 per median household was lost. Or was it? Or was it? Was it lost? Or was it stolen? Because things like median net worth don't just jingle through a hole in your pocket and wind up sort of forming a breadcrumb trail of coins as you amble down the sidewalk looking for work. No, it goes somewhere. Now, where do you suppose it went? Anybody? Come on, it's just like Romper Room. I can see the little hands out there. Yeah. They, come on, want it all. They want it all. And they are damn sure not above taking it. And they done did. When we see median net worth in America just sort of disappear like that in 3 years' time, remember, nothing ever happens on Wall Street but somebody's there making a buck on it. And when that median net worth was lost, people got rich. We tend to forget in watching the demise of financial institutions during the meltdown that there were people who got fabulously rich watching our economy revert to its ash state. Somebody's got all those $50,000 in his or her pockets. All those $50,000 are financing some lobster lunches. Because a lot of people got rich, not poor, on credit default swaps, on derivatives. Yeah, Ron in Raleigh writing says, yeah, I know. It's all in Mitt Romney's sofa cushions. Well, you know, Ron, it kind of is. It's certainly in the sofa cushions of the predator class. That is hard to escape. Marty, Ron was referring to the merger between Duke Energy and Progress Energy, which spells disaster for a lot of people. Then again, a lot of us don't have a choice on who our power company is in the first place. Most of us get a Hobson's choice. No horse at all, or the horse by the... That's the way it is here with Appalachian Power. Just is. A lot of interesting stories in the stack this evening. Talking about the working class, and Ron mentioned age discrimination? Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not offering this story because there's anything particularly noteworthy about it. It's just a car wreck story. But it's one of those little journalism moments where I wind up going, I bet there's more story here than most people realize. Of course, we will probably not hear any more of it. It's just another car wreck story. The dateline is from a little town called Summersville, West Virginia, just a matter of about 20 minutes from here. It is one of the world's most notorious speed traps. There's always somebody pulled over on the side of the road getting a ticket. They quite frequently have a Canadian license plate. Shaking down Canadians is the pastime of the local Summersville Police Department. No, but the dateline is Summersville, West Virginia, and it simply reads in the Charleston Gazette, a Nicholas County woman was killed Sunday after a tractor-trailer rear-ended the car she was riding in near Mount Nebo, police said. It was along U.S. Route 19, which is the four-lane highway that runs through Summersville. It was the details that caught my eye. The tractor-trailer rear-ended a pickup truck. The 78-year-old woman who was killed was a passenger in that pickup truck. Sad. Even a full one-ton pickup truck does not win in an altercation, especially from the rear, with a semi tractor trailer. The story is silent on whether the tractor trailer was perhaps a coal hauler or whether it was just some truck, some semi. Yeah, John, Dr. John said, I know where this is going. Coal truck? Don't know. Don't know, John. Ain't in the report. And you know, John and I had an interesting conversation about local journalism on the program last night, and this is one of those moments where you'd like to have them. That whole who, what, when, where, why, how, and how much thing. What kind of semi-tractor trailer? I mean, was it a car hauler? That'd have a lot of extra inertial force. Was it loaded with coal? Was it hauling ass along and empty? Was it a timber truck? We got a lot of timbering goes on around here. Those things are terrifying. No, that information is not conveyed, but this information is, and it's why I bring it to you on the heels of Ron's note from Raleigh. The driver, one Foster March of Glenville, rear-ended a 2007 Chevrolet pickup truck driven by... And there's one thing I left out in reading that to you. Driven by age 76. I am no ageist, okay? I'm really not. I would like to perhaps be 76 and doing this show because I love doing this. I have loved it since we began doing it, and I have never ceased to love it. And I think to be doing this at 76 would be it beats the hell out of gum in your oatmeal. But by the same token, where things like semi-tractor trailers are concerned, why? And so we know it was not somebody driving a Walmart truck because the gentleman, the 76-year-old who plowed into the rear end of the pickup truck, was from Glenville, West Virginia, which is also part of coal country. and not too awfully far from Summersville. Seventy-six years old. Now, is it, does it go without saying, is it absolutely given, is it de facto that if you're 76 years old, you ought not be driving a tractor trailer? I will leave that consideration to you. But there is something wrong with a country where a 76-year-old man has to drive a tractor trailer. Isn't there? Well, he was just trying to stay active, Bob. Well, great! Do that! But 76? And you gotta get behind the wheel of a monster truck every day? So the lights will stay on? Because you can't make it on Social Security? And you didn't have any kind of a meaningful pension? I don't know. See, Clayton, you get it. Yeah, well, you know, Bob, you can't drive the show up somebody's ass and kill them. True. But is this one of those moments where if we told, George W. Bush about it, he'd say,
I find that uniquely American that a 76-year-old man is still driving a semi-tractor trailer truck and rear-ending people on four-lane highways. Uniquely American.
The driver of the pickup truck was also transported to the hospital with unknown injuries. No word on whether the decedent was wearing a seatbelt. Not a whole lot of word of any sort of thing in this here newspaper report. This being West Virginia, and this being rank speculation, odds are that that tractor trailer was one of two things. It was either a timber hauler or a coal truck. Long odds against it being a Walmart truck or a Kroger truck or, a truck transporting gasoline for one of the convenience store chains. Significantly better odds that it was either a timber truck or a coal truck. 'Cause see, here's how the coal truck business works in Appalachia. The coal companies, of course, hate actually paying human beings to do work. They hate it from the check-writing standpoint, and they hate it from the liability standpoint, and they hate it from the workers' comp standpoint, and they hate it from the accounting standpoint, from having to withhold things like FICA. So some several years back, they created this dodge whereby instead of hiring somebody to drive truck for the company, they created a small army of so-called, and those of you who follow labor issues will know what a pernicious phrase this is, a small army of so-called independent contractors. Rick Smith, for instance, my colleague who follows me every night on the horn, could tell you a lot about this. Rick was a driver. The coal company actually buys the brand new coal truck. And they say to the driver, here's what we're going to do. We're going to lease you this here truck. And after you've driven for us for X number of years, you're going to own the truck. It'll be all yours. And they pay pennies per the ton of coal hauled. The poor worker doesn't get paid by the hour, doesn't even get paid by the mile. He's responsible for his own Social Security withholdings and pays a premium penalty because he is an independent contractor. He has no recourse to workers' compensation if he is injured on the job. And the truck that he gets when he's done hauling is pretty much a rattle-trap death rig, worn down to a frazzle. I don't know if that is the case here. I just know that a 76-year-old man was behind the wheel of an immense vehicle when, for reasons passing understanding and certainly not reported in this here report, he lost control of it and rear-ended a man and a woman in a pickup truck, sending the man to the hospital and the woman to her grave. One of the questions that needs to be answered is, did he have to drive that truck? Is this one of those tragedies from the 99%? 76 years old and jamming gears. One more day. One more day. So you can pay the power bill, pay the cable bill, pay the rent, the mortgage. Pay for the health insurance? No, he's got Medicare, doesn't he? Again, I don't want this to be perceived as some sort of ageism, but there is something profoundly disturbing in these very few details that we do have. The woman killed was 78 years old. The man who was sent to the hospital was 52. It didn't happen in the dark and still of the night on a rain-slick road. It happened yesterday. At 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And yesterday was a beautiful day. We are told at the end of the story that the investigation continues. And it will. It will continue if by that we mean inquiry will be made as to whether or not there were any improper substances in the bloodstream of the guy who rear-ended the couple. It'll continue. It will likely continue until the end of days for the man who was driving the truck. But the investigation, neither by the author of the story nor by the investigating law enforcement officer, the investigation will not continue as to why 76-year-old men who live in the greatest, richest country in the world are behind the wheel of a machine that is almost always inherently dangerous. Was he running loaded or unloaded? And I don't mean alcohol. I mean what was on the rig. I kind of wish Rick was handy. Rick Smith. I'd like to, because I am not an over-the-road truck driver, I'd like to have Rick's opinion as to whether or not folks need to be driving semis at the age of 76. What becomes of one's reflexes by 76? Did the man have a seizure? We had a story about that just yesterday. Republicans trying to make light and have a yuck, a ha-ha, over a man having a seizure and having three separate accidents, who happened to be the Secretary of Commerce, and trying to allege, with no information whatsoever, that the man was drunk. There are any number of possible reasons for this wreck. And I don't know if anybody else is like me. I checked the comments section on this story and there's not a peep. But I saw semi-tractor trailer and 76 years old. And a part of me said, stop! What? Is this really the America that we want? Shouldn't, at 76 years old, shouldn't this man have been enjoying a second career or tilling his garden or having some sort of... Has he not? Because odds are, if he's 76 years old, he's probably, given that this is West Virginia, been working since he was 12. Doesn't an enlightened society at some point say, enough, you've earned your rest, go forth and enjoy the grandchildren, travel, see the country, do whatever it was you always dreamed of working when, doing when you were too busy working to do it? Or at least provide that opportunity? He may not have Medicare. He may not have Social Security. He may just have to work until he dies. Or until someone else does. Or did. Like I said, not a big story, not earth-shattering, and certainly just like yesterday's massacre story. Just another day in the greatest, wealthiest nation in the world. Where the butcher's bill is paid by the innocents. And where the funeral directors reap the free market rewards. This from Ron in Raleigh. Hey, Bob, you find me a 76-year-old with no drugs in his system. I work on the shipping end of the distribution chain and occasionally see an elderly, look at who's talking, driver. Most of these guys are just hanging on to get what passes for a pension. Those pensions have been continually pushed further into the future by greedy trucking companies. Yeah. Yeah. Jim noting, based on earlier comments, unparalleled robbery by these bastards, Bob. They really do want it all. A return to wage slavery and feudalism. That's all the working class is good for, isn't it? Working? What do I mean, golden years? Work, damn it! Where else to go? Oh, let's see. Did we save that one for tomorrow? I don't know. I will throw this out there for your consideration. You may recall that Brother Albert called in talking about the furor over the EPA using drones, you know, to make sure that the CAFOs aren't completely poisoning the water supply, and how all the Second Amendment guardians are out there, they're going to fire at them, they're going to shoot me down, one of them government drones. Got to lead them real good. Probably take a little more than the 12-gauge. That's what I ordered my Israeli 50 caliber for. Well, if there's ever, and I'm sorry, I'm not trying to be like Groucho Marx and say whatever it is you're for, I'm against it. But this goofy idiot is a pretty good barometer for being able to tell right from wrong. If he's going in one direction and you want to be on the right, moral, decent, upstanding, otherwise integrity side of things, you go the other way. I'm speaking, of course, about Senator Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist. I'm rich, I'm socially secure, I'm comfortably well off. Today, in the Senate of the United States, where apparently boredom reigns supreme, Rand Paul, Senator Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, introduced a bill that would prohibit law enforcement agencies from using unmanned aerial vehicles, otherwise known as drones, to conduct surveillance without a warrant. Laudable. Sounds positively laudable, doesn't it? Ought to be an easy call. There's only one problem. And it wasn't brought on by that secret Kenyan Muslim with an anti-colonialist bias and a deep-seated hatred of white people. It goes back to the 1980s. Something we students of history like to call the Rehnquist Court. Maybe even the Burger Court, I don't know. You might recall that Chief Justice Rehnquist, who was on the Burger Court too, you might recall that Chief Justice Rehnquist was whacked out of his mind on heavy-duty mind-altering substances for virtually the entire second half of his Supreme Court career. Wasted! You know, real Spicoli kind of. Dude! Hear that? That's my brain. I'm on the Supreme Court of the United States and I'm toasty. Way back in the 1980s, the Supreme Court of the United States ruled that the Fourth Amendment does not categorically prohibit warrantless aerial surveillance. It doesn't. And, don't anybody tell Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, this or anything, because we wouldn't want actual brains to get in his way. But if the court has already made a ruling that something's not unconstitutional, then his little federal statute's not going to have much impact. The Preserve and Freedom from Unwarranted Surveillance Act of 2012 has been introduced, requires the government to obtain a warrant before using drones to conduct surveillance. However, the government would not be required under the bill to obtain a warrant if they wanted to fly it over the borders and stare at Mexicans. You know, they ain't got none of them rights what Jesus done give us. Who does this protect? Well, the laws relating, for instance, to the poisoning of a public water supply by a giant industrial CAFO, those are criminal laws. Guess who gets protected? Yeah, it's not Cletus out there with his shooting gun growing on a patch of aqua buddha blue. No. It's people like Monsanto. It's people like ConAgra, Archer Daniels Midland, great big giant cow-killing, pig-killing, and chicken-killing enterprises. They're the ones that get protected by this. Just saying. I don't want, these are the words given by Senator Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, to CNN. I don't want drones roaming across, crisscrossing our cities and our country, snooping on Americans. And that's the surveillance state that I'm very concerned about. And that's what our bill would stop. Coincidentally, he also introduced legislation that would utterly repeal the Patriot Act. No, he didn't. Are you kidding? No. Patriot Act's just fine. Fine as frog hair. These right-wingers never do anything that there isn't some sort of a benefit to the 1%. Remember, it was Senator Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, who said that he didn't think anybody'd be missing any hilltops in eastern Kentucky and Appalachia. So what if we blow a few of them up? And when the Upper Big Branch disaster took place, he said that, you know, people dying in gassy pits is just part of business. And the free market would regulate itself. So, there you have it. Oh, like I said, there is no small amount of stuff to go into this evening. We'll just say that that's Moran Tuesday stuff for Ron Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist. Oh, a little update while it's on my mind. I told you that I would be talking about the AIC Act every night for the foreseeable future, and I intend to be good to my word on this. We, as I noted, hope to see the bill introduced long about next week. And I got a project for you. Well, some of you. Do any of you live in New Jersey in either the districts of Representative Rush Holt or Representative Frank Pallone? They are both awesome people.